welcome into the Hall of Lane podcast. I'm Trey Benson. I'm joined by my good friend Jason Melia, and Jackie B will be co-producing with us today.
Hello. So,
Jackie, you can say hello too if you want.
Hello.
It's kind of hard to start off this podcast. We're recording on a Sunday, 26th, and this morning, the NBA community, the sports community in general, lost one of its most memorable icons in a terrible helicopter accident in California, which claimed 9 lives today. Among those was Kobe Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter. And it's hard to like discuss this because he's a memorable figure for the LA sports community. And a lot of the NBA players around the league just had a general respect for him. And I didn't follow basketball super closely for a while, but as my fandom kind of started going up and I started watching more Blazers games, it just kind of became a thing that we had a natural rivalry with the Lakers. And every time the Lakers came to town, it was basically us versus Kobe. And I just have a lot of memories of hating Kobe because he's a sports villain in some moments, because you know when he has the ball, he's probably going to make that last shot. It's just terrible news. And one thing that just really disturbed me when I saw the news on Twitter was some of the trolls come out and they hide behind their keyboard and they try to trash the man, and I just find that disgusting, and there's no place for that.
Yeah, there's just not a whole lot. I mean, even some of the best NBA players in the league were at a complete loss of words for this. Doc Rivers, most celebrities, like Kobe Bryant's stardom was beyond basketball itself. It was worldwide. I think everybody who watches basketball seriously admires Kobe, and the people that admire Kobe the most are his peers. The tragic news about him and his daughter being in the helicopter is terrible, and there really is such a thing as it being too soon. Kobe, I mean, as everybody, was not the perfect person, as everybody knows. But to trash him at a time like this, and for his entire career and what he meant to so many people, it really, really was too soon for those Twitter trolls to come out. I don't think there was that many Twitter trolls. Like, anything. Everything is going to get trashed on in the internet era. People just make their jokes and stuff like that. It's just going to happen. It's just the era we live in now. I try not to dwell on it. It seems like everybody had an incredibly positive interaction with Kobe every time they met with him, saw him, talked to him. He seemed like a very insightful person. Like you said, as a Blazer fan, he was the perfect villain, I think. He's just the ultimate competitor. You can really leave any game feeling anything other than respect. I think where the rivalry really comes out, Blazers versus Lakers, is the fandoms, the fans.
Yeah. I just want to leave it off on a positive note. Like, he's probably one of the closest players to come close to mimicking MJ's style and the way he played. Like, if you watch some highlight videos, you'll see like Kobe kind of mirrored Jordan's game, and he's just a fun player to watch, and a lot of good memories and bad memories of him hitting buzzer beaters against the Blazers. Or
yeah.
A lot of kids are still going to be shooting at garbage cans with a paper ball and saying Kobe. And that's just something that's probably going to be passed down to generation after next of basketball fans. So,
yeah, we as people born in the 90s never really got to see Michael Jordan other than highlights. But I think we got a wholesome taste of what Michael Jordan would have been like with Kobe. And one of my earliest, like, basketball memories was when I first started getting into the NBA, around like when Brandon Roy was drafted, and that's kind of when I started watching basketball, as long with like a lot of people in the same age group as me. One game, I think it was a year removed from Brandon Roy winning the Rookie of the Year. Kobe, by himself, he had a lot of injuries on his team this year, by himself, dropped 65 points against us and beat us in OT. And if you look at the box score for that, it's crazy. He took over 30 shots and made 23 shots. He hit, I think, 8 threes that game of 13. He took 8 threes and hit of 13 shots. And that's when I was kind of introduced to how great Kobe was, even though I was supposed to hate him. There's nothing but respect there. And I guess I just wanted to leave it off on a positive note.
Yeah, thoughts and prayers out to the Bryant family and all other family members lost in that helicopter crash today. It's just terrible. But we're going to move on. All right, let's jump into the rewind. So we'll touch on the NFL. It's kind of in a somber state. Well, I think that Pro Bowl today, I don't know, I didn't really tune in to the skills events. I mean, I saw some clips here and there, but they kind of threw out a tribute to Kobe. I think at one point they took a moment of silence, and you could hear fans in the background there chanting Kobe in the back in the stadium. So that was a cool moment of the Pro Bowl. I didn't really watch it too much. I'm never really too into the NFL Pro Bowl because it's just kind of people not really playing defense.
Yeah, NFL players were doing Kobe celebrations when they got a sack or they got a touchdown. It was cool to see. Obviously, Kobe's reach is far and wide, particularly in the sports realm.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Landry had a cool dodgeball skills event that he just mopped up the under team, essentially one-on-one to everybody. That was the only cool Twitter moment I saw of the Pro Bowl. It just seems like the Pro Bowl is kind of like a weird event that no one really tunes into because football is such a physical sport. And if when you see NFL players not going 100%, it's just kind of like watching flag football at that point.
Yeah. So in other NFL news, Eli Manning, he retires. It kind of was expected. I mean, I didn't think too many teams or thought Eli was going to go to another team from the Giants because it seemed like Daniel Jones took over that position, and it just seemed like his time had kind of come to an end. He gave us really memorable sports moments against those Patriots football teams and winning those two Super Bowls. Probably some of the craziest plays in history. And he stopped the Patriots from going 19-0. So we can thank Eli Manning for that, for stopping snobby Patriots fans everywhere from having their perfect
potentially 8 Super Bowls.
So he's a hero in some respects, but he was, if you look at his numbers, I think his career record is 500. Just thinking off it. And he also was just pretty mediocre for the most part, but he did have some really crazy playoff runs, and he'll probably actually end up in the Hall of Fame for just those two Super Bowl runs.
Yeah, as far as like the internet era goes and like watching viral clips or watching big moments in the NFL, I think he just fits right in that section where he's so important to the sport because of the biggest, like, some say the biggest upset in NFL history, winning 2 Super Bowls. He's exactly 500 as a quarterback, all of his wins combined. So he's the definition of mediocre. I think you could do worse than him. You think you could do a lot better than him. Who's to say? He'll probably be an NFL Hall of Fame just because if we probably go through the list of NFL quarterbacks, we can poke holes in so many of these like old timey NFL players, whether it's like Joe Namath or Terry Bradshaw or whatever. It's different eras, obviously. You can make your case for every single one of them, but winning 2 Super Bowls and being relevant for as long as he was, I think it's a hard case to keep him out.
In other Giants news, I think they're trying to build the worst coaching staff. They recently hired Jason Garrett as offensive coordinator, former coach of the Cowboys. And I think they hired Kitchens. I kind of want to confirm that, if they actually hired Coach Kitchens or not. But I saw that they're interested in him. What do you think of that?
I have no idea. I mean, say what you want about the I don't know what they're doing. It seems like another throwaway season. I don't know. They're just trying to put notable people with experience on the team. I guess they're just going by experience and not going by their track record whatsoever. I guess Kevin Kitchens was good 2 years ago. He proved this season to be an absolute terrible coach that couldn't manage a team full of talent. I don't know what they saw in him. I have no idea what they're doing. And with Saquon Barkley, my heart goes out to him. I really do. He's stranded on that team, potentially going to get hurt next season as well.
Yeah, so let's jump into the other notable NFL story from the weekend. I didn't dig too deep into it, but Antonio Brown was, he got arrested and then he was released from jail. But I heard you pulled up some stats on this, so I'm going to let you take this one.
So Antonio Brown had a dispute over payment for a truck that was carrying his property from somewhere to his new residence. And the truck driver charged him $4,000, essentially, to drop off the stuff. And Antonio Brown and his trainer both disagreed with it. And then the truck driver threatened to drive away with Antonio Brown's property because he didn't want to pay the $4,000. And they essentially threw rocks at the truck, trying to get the guy out of the car and stop the truck and take his property back. So after an arrest warrant went out to Antonio Brown, he turned himself in and he made bond, and that's where we're at. He paid for the bond for both him and his trainer, who are both charged with battery and theft, I believe.
Yeah, I don't want to like try to trash him too much and say he's crazy, because he might just be going through like a mental health breakdown. It might be a case of CTE. Jackie mentioned that there were some news stories going around that he hasn't been the same since his hit that he took from Vontaze Burfict.
Yeah, I remember that one. It was a side swipe hit where he just went completely limp. There's no really telling exactly what could go wrong. I mean, after the Aaron Hernandez documentary that came out about CTE and how harmful it can be to your mental health, and just the poisonous kind of rhetoric towards him in the media, like he's not shy from going on the media and reading every bad thing people say about him. That's also not good for his mental health. I don't think there's a lot of people, this is me projecting, but I don't think there's a lot of people in his life that can tell him, this is a good thing for you to do, this is a bad thing for you to do, and he'll actually take reasonable advice. He's just in a really toxic part of his life, and he thinks it's all going fine if you ask him, so.
Also to note, when the judge gave the order for his bail and arraignment, she said that he needed to give back his passport and he needed to go to, and it had a court order mental health evaluation. So we'll see when that happens and what the outcome of that rehabilitation is.
Yeah, that's pretty important factoid there.
All right, so let's move on from the NFL as we get ready for that exciting Super Bowl matchup coming up and move on to the NBA. So just some quick storylines before we jump into the topic of the week. Dame had a ridiculous game against the Warriors. He dropped 61 points. We'll cover his performance more in deep later in the show. Just a really impressive performance, as he tends to do when he needs to carry this Blazers team with much malign of injuries and missing CJ missing CJ McCollum, and it's tough, but he put the team on his back and it carried him to victory against the Warriors, which I think the Warriors had the worst record in the NBA, but no less, we got the win, so that's a good story. But moving on to what we've all been waiting for. If you're an NBA fan, you've been following the top prospect of the 2019 draft class is Zion. He's finally healthy, and he made his debut against the Spurs on Wednesday. And basically, he was in the game for, I think he was limited to 4 minute spurts, and he started the game. And if you didn't tune in until the fourth quarter, that's when he really made his mark on the game, because he wasn't doing much for those first three quarters. He couldn't really get into a rhythm. He made some nice plays here and there, but his stat line was almost bust worthy heading into that fourth quarter. And then he just took over the game for this pretty incredible 5 minute stretch, 3 to 5 minute stretch. And he went 4-for-4 from 3-point line, which no one really expected. It was kind of funny. If you watch those highlights, he's basically just challenged to, they just, hey, shoot the ball. And he went 4-for-4 from three and brought the team to, I think they actually took the lead on his last shot. And then they went on to lose that game, but it was pretty exciting. Debut for a prospect.
Watching that game, things that jump out to me, hitting 4 3-pointers in a row is pretty crazy, especially because how good we know he's going to be in transition and in the paint because of his size. Him extending his range like that is a cool thing to see. He obviously won't hit threes at that clip, but it was a very impressive, living up to the hype moment for Zion Williamson. The thing that really stood out to me was one play. I think he threw the ball up. It was a floater. It bounced off. Jakob Poeltl was going up for the rebound. And Zion Williamson was out of bounds. And his second jump, he yanked the ball out of Jakob Poeltl's hand and, like, laid it up. And Jakob Poeltl just had no idea what just happened. I thought that was really funny. The athleticism, even though he's pushing 300 pounds, is crazy. I really hope we'll get into it later when we're going over the rookies, but I really hope he doesn't get any injuries. He just seems like a stupid athletic dude on the level of Westbrook, Charles Barkley, Blake Griffin, and LeBron James. I just don't hope that he doesn't have the same injury history as like a Blake Griffin, God forbid.
All right, let's jump into the topic of the week. NBA midseason catch-up. A lot of people have been mostly following the NFL up to this point. Like me, I kind of just follow the NBA casually when the NFL is kind of in season. I just try to keep up with the Blazers and big storylines. But with this Pro Bowl break and time to rest between the Super Bowl, it was a good time to just dive into the NBA because they're at the midseason point. All-stars have been selected, and we can start to see what the playoff pictures are going to start to look like. And so I think it's a good time to catch up in the NBA storylines and start to tune in and get ready for, I think it's going to be an interesting year in the playoffs. So pretty much the Bucks and Lakers have emerged as the clear final favorites in my eyes. So the Bucks are leading the East standings and the Lakers are leading the West standings currently. And they've showed their finals chops in my eyes.
Yeah, I think the Bucks defensively are even better than they were last year. Whether this means that the Bucks added more pieces to supplement Brogdon, or Giannis just took another step up in his game. I'm looking at defensive rating for players that have a minimum of 30 minutes on the field and a minimum of 20 minutes on the court and a minimum of 20 games played. And the top 10 players, they have 7 players in the top 10 of defensive rating. So their point differential is even better than it was last year, almost double-digit point differential, and they're just destroying teams. And Giannis isn't even playing that many minutes. I'll pull it up right now, but he's playing a record high PER, which means in a very short amount of time, he's putting up record numbers on the levels of Wilt Chamberlain, Kobe, and James Harden, essentially.
Yeah, just talking on Giannis real quick. What I've noticed this year is he's added a respectable three-point jump shot. I don't know what clip he's hitting that. I think it's around 30%. But this year, he's definitely, you've seen that he's put that in work in the offseason, and he's brought that to the table this year for each game. He's taken probably 4 to 5 threes a game. And some games, he's even made like 5 or 6 of them. And it's just another dimension that if he gets that number up to like 38% from three-point line, it just makes him so unstoppable, because he's already, you can't, every game it's like he's just posterizing who's ever down low. Like, you can't stop him on the drive. Once he gets ahead of steam, he can cross you over, and just, he's incredibly long and can dunk on anybody. It's just, it's pretty unfair. It's like someone took a 2K and just made the guy crazy long, but he's super fast and he's got crazy post skills. Like, it's pretty ridiculous just watching him. He's probably the most entertaining player out there right now. Just the way he plays with passion. He wants to win every night, and that's what's reflected in the Bucks record. I think they're only have 6 losses on the season. And yeah, I think he's probably going to win MVP, like you said in the last episode. He brings it every night, so.
Yeah, just to build off your three-point spiel. So last year he took 2.8 threes a game and hit 25-ish percent of those. This year he's shooting 5 threes and a game and hitting 32%. Like you said, he's just increasing in confidence and he's getting better at shooting. In the next 2 years, I think he is going to easily be a consistent 38% shooter if these trends continue. It's just a matter of people guarding him on the perimeter. There's going to be a point where you can't guard him on the perimeter, and it's going to open up even easier baskets for whether it be Middleton or Brooke Lopez down in the paint.
Yeah. Now moving on to the Lakers. They added probably a top 5 player in Anthony Davis to their team last year, and they already had LeBron James. So the expectations are set pretty high. And they came out the gate with a loss against the Clippers, another pretty strong team. But they right the ship, and they've been pretty dominant. They're leading the West standings, and LeBron's kind of revamped his game. He's got pretty ridiculous numbers considering the age he's at, but that's just kind of what we expect from LeBron at this point. He's leading the league in assists, so yeah, LeBron just never ceases to amaze me with what he does in the offseason. And, well, the assist numbers just come from, he's throwing lobs to AD, and AD's just going up like 20 feet in the air to catch the lobs. It's almost an unstoppable play.
I think the biggest difference between the Lakers and the Clippers, I think the Lakers with LeBron, he knows everything there is to know about playmaking and getting people in the right positions to be successful, where I think both Kawhi and Paul George are both individually really good players. I think Kawhi has improved his playmaking ability, but usually it's just ISO on Kawhi, or Paul George is hitting a deep three, or they're doing some kind of pick and roll kind of thing with Lou Will. I think they just need to find a good piece to fit all those pieces together and them just to mesh a little bit. I think the Lakers benefit from Anthony Davis and LeBron James being so incredibly good. Their team is incredibly top heavy, where the Clippers have a lot of different pieces that need the ball, whether it be Beverly at times, with Lou Will, Montrezl Harrell. They have a lot of really good pieces that need the ball a decent amount, and they can't just rely on their top two players scoring all the points for them, even though that's what they're doing right now. I think they're interested in acquiring somebody by the trade deadline that has a little bit more size, because they're essentially a team with all threes and fours, essentially. And Montrezl Harrell, as good as he is in the pick and roll, is not going to go up against whether it's Rudy Gobert or Anthony Davis in the playoffs, or Giannis in the finals, potentially. He's just going to get eaten up because of his size, even though I really enjoy him as a player. They're interested in getting more size on the Clippers team. And it's just taking more time for them to mesh together, where the Lakers are just almost like a finished product at this point, until we see them at the playoffs, obviously.
Yeah, I agree with you that the Lakers have some depth issues, but they do have like LeBron and AD. But the Clippers, yeah, they have a really well-rounded roster. Like that lineup that they have with, I think it's Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, Kawhi, Paul George, and Patrick Beverley. That's a really great starting five to close games and start games. And they're just, like you said, they're figuring things out. But I think they're the scariest team to face in the playoffs, because they have Kawhi. And it's just a question of health with them. Like, if George and Kawhi can stay healthy, it's also the same thing of the Lakers too. But because AD's always had these hampering injuries kind of following him around. But it seems like they're both healthy right now, both teams respectively. So if they both stay healthy, no one gets injured, I think it will probably be Clippers-Lakers in the Western Finals or the round before that, because right now the Clippers are in the 3 seed.
Yeah, this Lakers team and this Clippers team are just so far beyond like the other teams in the West. And even in the East, in my opinion, I think Giannis could give them a run for their money, maybe. Last year, Giannis didn't do too hot in the playoffs after a quick start against Toronto. And then Toronto figured out how to box out Giannis, essentially. So that could be a big problem. Their ceilings are so high for the Clippers and the Lakers, but it's all riding on their best two players, and the fact that those best two players are both in the same conference. And for the sake of the NBA and fun playoffs, I hope they stay healthy. I hope load management works. I really do. It doesn't seem like AD and LeBron are taking load management, even though I believe those two are the people that probably need it the most sometimes. It's a really up in the air. I really hope they stay healthy.
Yeah, the Bucks have just been so dominant, and it's just at this point, everybody just wants them to prove it in the playoffs, because they admittedly probably had an early exit last year, but that Raptors team had Kawhi Leonard, and he was just on another level that year in the playoffs, and it seems like he's the same player this year. He's just dominant offensively. He kind of makes the game his own pace. Like, he just comes out the court, and he gets his spot, and he's going to take a mid-range jumper here. He's going to back you down, mid-range fadeaway, and then he's going to get a spot-up three. Like, you just kind of know Kawhi. He's got that Mamba mentality late in games, and he just kind of takes it over. It's a really interesting development that I've seen in his game the last few years. I think the last year that he was a Spur was really when we started to see Kawhi kind of morph into this superstar status and a closer during those late game situations. So,
yeah, Kawhi has always been like that dude that's like, oh, he's just incredibly good on defense. He can lock up LeBron. He can lock up anybody, and he's okay at offense. Now that like he's really like rounded his game out to the point, maybe it's because the injury might have had something to do with it, but he's really rounded his game out to where he's a true ISO scorer. He can get you a bucket when you need it, whenever you need it. I mean, the playoffs accentuated that when he was on Toronto. They gave Kawhi the ball and just like, get us buckets, and he can do that. And he's showed it this year, I think, dropping a few 40-point games, 30 and 40-point games consistently. Yeah, it's pretty crazy from someone that had a really awkward shot when he was drafted, and someone that was like a 20-point scorer on the Spurs, and now he's a 25-point scorer and can get you, it can carry your team in the fourth quarter, essentially, points-wise.
Yeah, he's just a really efficient scorer at this point in his career. Let's move on to the Trailblazers and do kind of a mid-season assessment.
This is going to hurt.
So right now, they're sitting in the 10th seed, 19-27. They're, what is it, 3 games back of the 8th seed? And basically, they had a slew of injuries hit them early on. They are dealing with the Nurkic injury coming in to the year from the last season playoffs where he got injured. And then Rodney Hood went down early. Then Zach Collins went down early. And now CJ McCollum went down. Well, he's not down for the season, but he got an ankle injury a few weeks ago. And the Trailblazers are kind of scrapping for assets at this point. They signed Melo, which was a pretty interesting story, and he's been all right for them. He hasn't been a godsend. It's not like we went up to the 5th seed or anything because he arrived, but he's been serviceable at the 4 spot for us.
Yeah, just any kind of scoring would help us, essentially, and that's what he's providing. He's not, I mean, he's objectively at the tail end of his career. He's just a certified bucket when we have nothing to go to, because it's either Damian Lillard off a pick and roll or tossing it to Carmelo for an ISO bucket.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how Carmelo's kind of reshaped his game. Like, I think when the years started to catch up to him, he didn't really want to become that space shooter and be more off the dribble. Like, he was reluctant to go into that role. He wanted to keep his role from the New York Knicks, where he would basically all the offense would run through him and he'd dribble out the clock until 8 seconds left and then take a fadeaway. And then teams started to ask him to, hey, don't do that. Move the ball and then hit your spot up threes when you're open and keep the ball moving. And he's kind of reluctant to do that. And then he was released by the Rockets. So it's interesting that when he came to the Blazers, he's kind of accepted a new role for them. And I think that's a good thing for him. I don't know how much longer he has in the NBA. He'll probably find another team next year, as long as he stays healthy.
Yeah, agreed. I don't think that he's gonna be too stubborn about his place on a team anymore. I mean, he's starting for us. I think that's all he really wanted was to start for a team. I think on OKC or on the Houston Rockets, they wanted him to come off the bench as a scorer. He just wasn't a big fan of that, I'm guessing. It's a little bit stubborn, but he's also a superstar, so I guess he might be entitled to that. I just don't think it's the best for that Rockets team, who was for the last 4 years have been shooting for a finals appearance. So,
yeah, he's definitely not a superstar anymore. He's a role player at this point in his career. He's kind of got to accept it. But Damian Lillard has taken his game to another level. He's improved he's having a career season. He's averaging 28.3 points, good for 5th in the league, 4.2 rebounds, 7.6 assists, and a per of 25.62, which is 7th in the league. He's having a great year, as he usually does. And it's just kind of tragic to see. I feel like we're wasting Damian Lillard's prime years. He's 29 years old right now. And it's just, I hate to see it, because he gives his all every night. And I really want him to win a ring.
Yeah, so the last 3 years we've been in the playoff race. And three of the past 4 years, we've ran into the buzzsaw that is Golden State. So I don't know if it was wasted years. Obviously, he's in the consideration for best point guards in the league once again. So it's kind of, yeah, like you said, tragic that this is kind of a throwaway season because of injuries. It's really sad to see. I think his points per game has gone up out of necessity. I don't think it's because he's gained another level. I just think that it's out of necessity. He needs to score those points. Otherwise, we are not going to be in any of these games, essentially.
Yeah. What do you think of Whiteside out there? Like, he's putting up these pretty big stat lines, but we're still losing. So, like, I don't know how much he's actually contributing. I feel like he's more of just a get-his-own-stats guy than actually a winning player, because when he was down in Miami, he put up these big stat lines too, but they weren't winning. And I think that's why Miami traded him away. And it's kind of just the way the NBA is now, we're kind of moving away from those big centers down low. You gotta have guys that can be versatile down low on the block. They got to be able to cover a shooting guard or a small forward that switches onto him from a pick and roll. And he's just too slow to do that. I mean, we got to see him courtside. He's an alien. He's huge. But in that game itself, we saw this game was Timberwolves, by the way. Forgot to mention that. But when they were playing the Timberwolves, we saw several plays where he would just take plays off, or the play didn't go his way, and he'd already be heading the other way. Like, he wouldn't be set up down low to go get an offensive rebound. Like, I've just seen a lot of things from him where he's just not a winning player. And I think we got to trade him. I think he has a big contract that he's working on right now. But
yeah, it just doesn't seem like he has a lot of instinct out there, especially when it's just not going his way. It seems like when he has to guard somebody that's a shoot first kind of guy, or a score first kind of guy, like, he's pretty good around the rim, and that's essentially all he is good around. He gets rebounds because he's incredibly tall. He protects the rim a decent amount, but doesn't really know what to do on offense most of the time we're not running a pick and roll for him. He can't post up. I think he's been kind of the same player he was 5 years ago. I think he's Andre Drummond. He's just really good at a few things, and he's never really improved on them. I mean, it's a pretty cool story. He was like a G League player that worked his way up in Miami to become what he is today. But I think his ceiling has been reached several times, and we got him out of necessity almost. I guarantee if Nurkic doesn't get hurt last year, we wouldn't have got him. Like the story of this entire season is just injuries led to decisions that have to be made. I mean, who starts behind earlier in the season? Who starts behind Whiteside if he's out? It's Anthony Tolliver. Like, we have no one. We have no one, essentially.
That guy looks like he's 50 years old.
He's at a pickup game at the Y.
Yeah, he's playing YMCA. Getting buckets. We traded him away, so we got him off.
Yeah, teaching kids fundamentals at the YMCA.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you think there's any future moves that the Blazers can make? The deadline's coming up.
I think there's potential for us to make a really bad trade. I think in my opinion, I don't think there's a real bona fide, ooh, we make this trade and we could be looking at the playoffs. Even if we trade somebody like CJ, even if we trade somebody like CJ and our assets, like, I don't think we can get anybody to come here and it's going to stay here. It's a tough situation. Like, I don't think we're going to get a good return on what we do unless we're looking towards the future. We could trade away like a CJ for picks if we really want to, like, really tear this thing down and build it back up. But I don't think we're a bad enough team to do that, because if we're a healthy team, we're right in the playoff mix instantly. We're battling with the Utah Jazz the Clippers, and who else is in the standings? Let me see. the Grizzlies for that 8th through 6th spot.
Yeah, you brought up CJ for possible trade moves. I think this season's kind of a wash, in my opinion. I don't think we should make any crazy dramatic moves this year, just based off the injuries that we've had. I would like to trade Whiteside. I don't really see a reason to keeping him. If we can get him for some picks or another young asset, or center or power forward, I'd like to see that. That's pretty much all I'd like to see. I think this, some may argue that we could still make the 8th seed, but what the 8th seed is a first-round exit against the Lakers. So I don't know if there's any value in that. I think we try to build for next season and hope that Rodney Hood comes back healthy, Zach Collins comes back healthy. I think Nurkic is supposed to come back this season later on. So there might be a run left for the Blazers. They might get Nurkic back, get a good rhythm going, and scrap to that 8th seed. But I don't see them upsetting the Lakers. As much as I love the Blazers, they don't have the guys right now to take them on. So moving on, we talked about it earlier, but Zion has arrived. Did you get to watch his game? Because I was only able to watch highlights of it, and I was like tuned into the stats, and like pretty much for the first 3 quarters there was nothing, and then it just like that moment happened for the 3-minute stretch where he brought the Pelicans back and they almost overtook the Spurs. I think they took Zion out because the coach had to follow a minutes restriction, so it was a good debate. And then he had another game this week. I think he put up like 17 points or something like that. But he had this incredible block that he swatted this ball like into the 8th row or something like that.
Yeah, he took the ball at the apex and sent it into the 17th row.
It honestly might have been goaltending, but it was yeah. It was incredible. He's just one of those players where anything he does is just like oohed and awed by the crowd, even if it's like an ordinary dunk. The crowd just goes wild.
And yeah, it's a circus act.
It's just one of those once-in-a-lifetime players that comes through where they're so hyped up that anything they do is just, like, sensational and the crowd goes crazy. It's kind of like LeBron in his early days at Cleveland. The crowd would go wild at anything he does. And I think you kind of start to see that with Ja Morant, too. He's crazy, and I think Memphis obviously loves what they got in him.
Yeah, I think Ja Morant is just so sensational to watch as well. It's really cool, the top two players in this draft. They're both in the West. They're probably going to be battling together. As long as the West stays as powerful as it is, we're probably going to see them in the playoffs. Maybe in the next, I mean, Memphis is already in the 8th seed. And the Pelicans, with Brandon Ingram increasing his game and the pieces they have to get another superstar on that team are incredibly dangerous. Seeing those two sensational dudes in the playoffs would be really fun to watch. Yeah, the debate whether Ja Morant or Zion is better, I think, I mean, obviously he went first overall.
It's too early on to debate that. I feel like I want to see the rest of the season shake out to start that debate on Zion versus Ja Morant, because Ja Morant's had a pretty incredible first half of his season. So I'd like to get a bigger sample size from Zion. Once he gets that minutes restriction lifted, he'll probably like play like 30, 33 minutes a game.
Uh-huh.
He's an incredible athlete. He's something that we haven't seen. Like, he's one of those unique body types. Obviously he's like on the verge of 280 pounds, I think, but he's 6'6". He's a 6'6 guy. He's a freaking truck out there. He's one of those unique body types like Giannis that just comes through every once in a while. He's got crazy athleticism, which is probably his biggest trait. He's also got some good playmaking abilities. I think we saw that in that first game where he made a couple of great open court passes.
It's cool to see that they have both Ja Morant and Zion have pretty well-rounded games. It's just about them getting better at them or getting more familiar with the stuff. It's not like a Ben Simmons where he doesn't have a jump shot whatsoever and he does everything else great, or a Giannis who can't shoot as well or can't, well, when he entered the league, didn't really know too much about post moves. And then he learned about post moves and got really good at it. And then now he is the best player in the league. So it's cool to see that these players are all almost final products. Like Luka is essentially just a really smart and strategic player, and someone that uses his step back and the fouls already in his game, and he's like 20 years old. And both Zion and Ja Morant have shown the same kind of intellect in like how they approach the game too. It's pretty cool to see. And the ceiling is astronomical for those guys.
Yeah, Zion just has those health questions coming in. Like with his knee, he already has a couple knee problems, but I really hope he stays healthy. That's just good for the league. He just on the low block, I think he's going to be a really dominant player. I think you've already seen like seeds of that. He just, on that play you mentioned against Poeltl, I think his shot got blocked by Poeltl, and he was so quick off his second jump that he grabbed the rebound and put it back in. Like, he's going to average like probably 3 to 4, or not, that's probably ridiculous, but like 2 to 3 offensive rebounds, I think. Because yeah, he's just so quick off the ground. And I can't wait to just see more of Zion in the coming weeks, because I feel like he's just going to have one of those games where he puts it all together and he just freaking goes off. Because in his future, I think he's a really dominant low post guy, transition guy, and he can play make on the break and out of the low post. I don't know if he's ever going to be a crazy shooter, but it's good to see that he's willing to take the three-pointer and he can't be left alone out there, I think.
He's almost positionless, in my opinion. I think you could put him almost anywhere. I mean, when you go small ball, you could put him at the five if you really wanted to. If he's matched up with the right person and you have the right personnel out there, you could put him at the five. You could put him at the three. I mean, everything short of, I don't know how good he is as running the point, but it doesn't seem like he's afraid of taking that position on. Like, it's really just a positionless player. And seeing him in the block like that, the talent jumps out at you. The tenacity he has in the paint.
He's just,
it's really
too big.
Cool. Yeah. He's a wide boy.
Yeah, he's super wide. Super wide boy. Yeah. I really like what they're building down there in New Orleans. They just have a really promising young crop of players now, especially with the leap that Brandon Ingram has taken. He's probably going to get one of those reserve all-star spots for in the West. He's had an incredible leap from last year. I don't know what the reason that was, but man, he has been on a tear too. He's been a closer for them. He's been kind of slacking in these games that Zion's been back, but I just know he's been pretty consistent. I think I'll pull up his stats.
He's just so savvy when it comes to scoring the ball. I think he's been pretty average on the defensive side for most of his career, and that hasn't really changed. But just taking on the role of being the primary scorer on that team is cool to see. I think on the Lakers when they were bad, I think he wasn't experienced enough to score as many buckets as he is now. And now that he got traded to a good team that has like really good pieces around him. And they throw the ball to him in ISO situations where it's cool to see. I think he's just rounded off his game. And whether you believe this or not, some people don't, some people do. It is a contract year for Brandon Ingram. So maybe when you throw him that $130 million contract for whatever amount of years, like that might change. I don't know, but hey.
Yeah, they just have a really interesting young core. Brandon Ingram is averaging 25 points this season, 6.5 rebounds, 4.3 assists, and a 20.71 per. And that just kind of shows you how impressive he's been this season. I bet the Lakers are really kicking themselves in the head I think they had the option of trading Kyle Kuzma instead of Ingram, but they're like, oh, we want to keep Kuzma. That looks so stupid in hindsight, but it might have been a case of Brandon Ingram finally got more opportunities to score the ball. If you look, there's a couple of videos out there where they show his changes to the shot form that he's taken, and it's just a much smoother release now. And that's a big reason all his numbers have gone up too.
Yeah, the thing around Kyle Kuzma and Brandon Ingram, I think Brandon Ingram was a little bit more ball dominant. And with LeBron James and potentially Anthony Davis coming into the door, and they're going to need the ball a lot, I don't think those three guys would mesh too well. I think that went behind the decision there. Whether it was a good decision or not, I don't know. But with the information they had, they knew that Kuzma didn't have the ball very much, and he was consistent. He was like a safe bet at the time. Plus, Brandon Ingram had those injury scare stuff with his blood and stuff like that, where they were kind of backing away from a little bit, I guess, too. That was around the trade as well, I believe.
Yeah, so they got something cooking down there in New Orleans. I think they're going to be a solid team. They might scrape to that 8th seed in the West. I think that'd actually be a really cool matchup. That's kind of what I want to see. I want to see either the Grizzlies or the Pelicans in that 8th seed. I mean, I'll root for the Blazers to get there, but it's not going to be pretty if we get there to that 8th seed. But
yeah, it's not going to be fun.
Pelicans have some good, really good young pieces to build around. Obviously, it was Zion and Ingram, but they also brought in Lonzo Ball, who's kind of had a better season too. And they have some interesting veterans in Derek Favors and Drew Holiday.
Yeah, they could trade away those pieces as well, Drew Holiday and Favors, for a superstar if they want, or a pick, another pick to increase their stock of Los Angeles Lakers first round picks, or they could trade it for a Bradley Beal or a Jaylen Brown or something like that, someone that can round out their huge roster of wings, essentially. I just really don't want to see, from a playoffs standpoint, the Blazers. I would like to see them because I'm a fan of them. But a Blazers team that is healthy, I would love to see. But if we're not healthy by the time Nurkic comes around, I think Nurkic is not going to be in tip-top shape when he comes around to being healthy. Collins is a minor increase for us coming off the bench if Nurkic is coming back around the same time. The Spurs, I just don't want to see them in playoffs. You know what would be kind of cool to see is the Suns take on the Lakers in the 8th seed. That could be a pretty fun matchup with Devin Booker finally being in the playoffs and finally being on a decent team and seeing what DeAndre Ayton has.
I don't know. The Suns actually have a pretty good young core too with Booker and Ayton, but
Kelly Oubre.
Ja Morant is just, we've mentioned him earlier. He's so exciting, man. And it'd be great to see him in his first season to play a playoff series against the Lakers. Like, I think they're probably going to lose if they're in that seed. But I think Ja Morant would have some great performances, because so far in this year, he's just been a highlight reel, basically. He has incredible handles, incredible passing vision. And he showed some shooting touch as well. There's been a couple games where he's just taken over in the fourth quarter. One of the most memorable games I can remember from his recent performances was he played against James Harden in the Rockets. And he basically just started taking threes left here and there. He was making everything against James Harden. And he was like, tell that motherfucker who I am.
Yeah, he has definitely a rational confidence, not irrational confidence when it comes to taking those threes. And he reminds me of a Derrick Rose almost. I hope he doesn't have the injury history of Derrick Rose, but as fun as Derrick Rose was in his prime, driving to the hoop, whether it's crazy spin moves or underneath floaters, he's just carrying this team spiritually and physically, and taking threes at a clip that he can only improve on, in my opinion. And he's just such a cool finished product. He's like in the running for being an MVP candidate if his game improves, and being just the heart and soul of that team. If they could just get, I don't know what they really need, just another superstar scoring, a scoring option, it'd be so much fun to watch.
They got Triple J, Jaren Jackson Jr. He's actually a really good power forward. He's had a pretty good second year. He's just able to shoot that three as a stretch four, and he provides some decent defense. He's not incredible, but he's a good offensive piece. It's a good 1-2 punch of what they have with Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. And they also have some really solid role players as well. Another former Oregon Duck is Dylan Brooks. He's been a solid player for them coming off the bench. But I did want to just go back to that game against Houston. Just, I pulled up his stat line. He had 26 points and 8 assists and 5 rebounds, but that was with 3 or 4 from the 3-point line for 75%, and he was 10 of 11 from the field for 91%. So that was just he's just had some great games this year. He's a really exciting young player. And him and Zion, I just think, headline this class, obviously, 1 and 2. It's kind of rare sometimes for both the number 1 and 2 to be like this good. Like sometimes it's usually the 2 or the 1 isn't as good, or they don't click at the same time. But I think both Zion and Ja Morant are just going to have pretty crazy games in the coming, for the rest of the season.
Yeah, unlike this next upcoming draft, which I heard was not very good, or not even nearly as close as good as this past year, 2019. So,
yeah, they got the next Ball brother coming through, and he's playing somewhere overseas.
Lithuania or something.
Yeah. So, yeah, I haven't been following NCAA at all, but I've heard like a lot of prospects are just not even playing. The top center going into the year, James Wiseman, played like 2 games, and then he was like suspended, and so he's no longer playing. And then you got the other top guards playing overseas. So just kind of, I don't know, NCAA has just kind of lost its appeal this year, because last year they had Zion playing at Duke, and he was incredible there. And Ja Morant wasn't on because he was, I think, there, was it a D2 school, Murray State, or are they still D1? They just weren't on television a lot, but you definitely got to see Ja Morant in the tournament. And I just don't know if we're going to have that same level of excitement coming into this year.
Yeah, just a no-name college that came out of nowhere during the NCAA tournament and shocked everybody and moved his stock up from basically unknown to the second overall pick behind an all-time great draft pick as far as hype goes.
All right, let's move on. We'll talk about All-Stars and who was selected when the All-Star reserves are filled out. So let's move on to Let Him Eat.
He's heating up. He's got smoke coming off his fingertips. Are you kidding me? He's as hot as a blowtorch.
It's a heat check. You knew that was coming. It's heat check time.
So just from today, everybody's kind of throwing out their Kobe tributes. Obviously, he's a memorable player. And one of the performances that kind of stood out to me was Trae Young. He came out and he switched his jersey to number 8 to start the game. He then took a 8-second delay of game. Not delay of game, but 8-second violation in tribute to Kobe. And then he swapped his jersey back to number 11. But he went on to drop 45 points, 14 assists, 6 rebounds in a win over the Wizards. The game was pretty high scoring, 152 to 133. It was just a notable performance, and I think it was pretty cool that he did this tribute to Kobe. I looked into it a little bit more. He actually met Kobe's daughter a few weeks ago, and his daughter was only able to go to 3 games, and the 2 of the 3 games that his daughter and Kobe went to were Atlanta games. And his daughter, Kobe's daughter, I think her name is Gianna. Yeah. I'm not. But she said that Trae Young was her favorite player. And I think that's a really cool performance. And especially to do it with his thoughts are probably still on the tragedy that happened today. So.
Yeah, the next person is Westbrook. I thought his performance this month was really notable. It seems like the Houston Rockets are going the opposite direction, but Westbrook's doing really good. He's averaging 31 points this month on 53% shooting from the field. He's not taking very many threes, which is probably a really smart thing for him to do since he's not very good at them. He's getting to the line a lot and keeping this Houston team alive while James Harden is hitting a little bit of a slump. It seems like James Harden isn't hitting very many shots. He's just going to the free throw at a record amount. I mean, his free throw attempts are now at 13 free throw attempts a game. He's shooting 26% from three and taking 12 threes a game. That's pretty crazy. He's still averaging 30 points, but I think Westbrook's scoring is what stands out to me, and the fact that he might be considered a all-star snub, but he's doing really well right now. Might just needed to get in the rhythm of things, being on OKC for his entire career and suddenly changing and expecting to be Westbrook of old. Like, I think it's a cool story about Westbrook. I think he gets probably the most amount of criticism, and I think it's probably rightfully so, but it's pretty cool to see him do so well this past month.
Yeah, so the next candidate, we have our man, Damian Lillard.
He had an
incredible performance against the Warriors. 61 points, 11 threes, 16 of 16 from the free throw line. And it wasn't just, he was just piling it on because they wanted to. They actually needed Dame to score this entire game because the game went to overtime against the Warriors. But that's just kind of telling to how many injuries the Blazers have had this year. McCollum was out this game, and Dame just had one of those, is it too early to say vintage Dame games, where it became Lillard time down the stretch, and he just took over. He had, I think, a three-pointer to tie the game. When I watched back, it was a pretty incredible shot. It was another step back by Dame. It looked questionable whether his foot was on the line or not when you watch it real time. But when they look at the replay, it was clearly his foot was behind the line and he just hit this crazy three to tie the game. And then they win it in overtime. So pretty great performance. So who do we want to give the trophy or whatever we call it? This let him eat trophy. Let him eat.
Who are we going to give the steak to? Who are we going to give the steak to?
Oh, I think, the steak.
Yeah.
Steak dinner.
I think we got to give it to Dame. I'm going to be a homer on this one. I think Dame is on the short list of players that when they're hot and when they're just knocking down shots, they just simply cannot be stopped. And there's nothing you can really do. You can pull when Dame puts up these kind of numbers, you can pull a playoff game, you can pull anything, any kind of game. Like there's nothing really stopping it. It's like Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, LeBron James, Kawhi. It's a very short list of players that just absolutely, when they're on fire, there's nothing stopping you, and you have to put your game on another level to even get close.
Yeah, I got to give it to Dame, too. Like, I pretty much knew it going into this week that it was going to be hard to top because 60-plus points doesn't happen often. And I think he dropped 60 earlier this year in a loss, actually. But it was good that they won. His stat line's incredible. I think he also had a few assists and rebounds, too. Like, he almost got a triple-double. And, yeah, it just... he's been incredible for us ever since we drafted him. I don't think he's ever had an off year. He's been pretty consistent in the playoffs. There's been a couple times where he's been shut down. I hearken back to that New Orleans series where I think we were the 3 seed and we got beat by the Pelicans. That's just because he was just double teamed from half court on. But he's always been an incredible performer for us. And I hope Neil O'Shea finds some reinforcements for the Blazers in the coming days. Maybe probably shouldn't trade away McCollum. I don't think we can do that yet. But yeah, let's give it to Dame. All right, we're going to move on to last call. So me and Jack, you got to go see Uncut Gems this weekend. You brought it up a few episodes ago, and I was lost in the sauce on what you were talking about. But let's just get right into it. My initial, spoilers, if you haven't seen this movie, it's a movie starring Adam Sandler, and he's a... How would you explain it? Gambler. He owns his own pawn shop thing.
He's a con man mixed with someone that has irrational confidence. He's not a good family man. He's a terrible family man. He's just, everything is the adrenaline of making bets and making bad calls and quote unquote winning.
So it's an interesting movie. I'd recommend to go see it. I mean, it's probably... It just depends on the type of person you are. If you're into basketball, you'll probably find it interesting. Or gambling, you'll probably find it interesting.
I generally think it's just a good movie all around, even if you aren't into those things. I think it's almost, it's like along the lines of like a Whiplash or a Black Swan type movie, where it's just someone that's in their own way and obsessive over something. And it's really fun to watch, and it's just a roller coaster front to back, and it doesn't even take a break for a second.
So Jason recommends going to see it. I think it's okay. I think you might like it, depending on the type of person you are.
Whoa, hands off the glass, KG. Hands off the glass.
Oh, dude. All right, let's get into spoilers. So my initial impression is just Adam Sandler was 11 out of 10, just going for it this entire movie. I think there is only like a minute or two between whenever he's talking. He's usually yelling. I don't know. There's not a lot of quiet scenes with him in this movie. his character is pretty interesting. Was it Harold? Harold, I think. Or
yeah,
Howard.
Howard. Yes.
Howard. It was an interesting character, but yeah, I couldn't find myself. I feel like they're trying to make him a likable. But he just was not very likable in my eyes. He was just kind of annoying.
Oh, yeah. You didn't get that from his wife? His wife was just so fed up with him.
Yeah.
I thought that was one of the funniest scenes in the movie. Spoiler alert once again. But just the scene where they're kind of like, it's a somber moment. It's a little bit of a lull in the movie. It's probably the only lull in the movie. And Adam Sandler is like watching her put on a dress. And and then he's like, yo, baby, are you going to take me back? Because they're going to get divorced. And Adam Sandler is a terrible person. It has like this super young girlfriend that's like essentially just with him for who knows how, for what reasons. But she's just a really shallow girl. And Adam Sandler's like, baby, you going to take me back? And then she just laughs and goes, fuck no. I thought that was a really funny scene. So if that kind of summarizes his character, he's just a piece of shit, and he's just like, even KG thought he was a crazy person. So, and he's probably the most competitive, one of the more competitive people in the NBA.
Yeah. What do you think of the way it was shot? It was kind of like gritty, and it wasn't a very pretty movie to look at. It just kind of followed Adam Sandler the entire time.
What? I thought it was incredibly pretty. It's claustrophobic. There's a lot of close-ups. I'll say that. And I think that's on purpose. I saw their previous movie, Good Time, and it's a good time. It's a good movie, too.
It's okay. I saw it, too.
Oh, really? You didn't like it? Oh, I just really like the Safdie brothers, but I'm kind of a film nerd. So it's really cool, like they have really cool shots with a lot of pretty things in it, like the jewelry and the watches and everything like that, and like the colors they use I guess are pretty pretty. And then when it wasn't in the jewelry shop, it got really gritty and like gross and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few funny scenes. I definitely wouldn't say it's a comedy, though. It's just like,
nah,
it's a drama, I guess. And you're just kind of watching this dude's life kind of spiral out of control. It's already been spiraling out of control from what you get from the first like few minutes. And you're just kind of hoping that he turns it around, but he never really does. He always just kind of stays the same character throughout the movie, which is kind of a thing if you're someone that wants him to change or you want to see character development or a significant change in the main character. It doesn't really happen here. He's just consistent the whole movie. He's just an annoying ass that he wants to win big off his bets.
Yeah, it's just one bad decision to another bad decision to another bad decision until he finally, quote unquote, wins. And then the big twist of the movie, kind of at least.
Yeah, did you see that coming?
I didn't really see it coming. When it happened, I was like, oh, that was really crazy. But like, it kind of made sense for his character. Like, he just did all these shitty things. And then he finally won. And then you thought he was just going to get away with it. And I thought it was a really fun movie. I thought like the time flew by. They probably could have made it a little shorter, but I thought it was pretty good nonetheless.
Yeah, time definitely flew by. Like it was kind of like an adrenaline rush the whole time. You're very anxious with the way he's acting. Just always making a big scene here and there. Something crazy happening to him. He's getting throated to the trunk, naked.
Yeah, it's a real fun movie. I think it's not for everybody. I think it's a fun movie. It's probably more digestible than the Safdie Brothers' last movie, Good Time. That was a pretty grim and disgusting movie, and that's a true thriller with kind of the same plot, where it's just this terrible dude with making terrible decisions and then getting what he deserved in the end, I guess.
Yeah, shout out to KG. He was pretty solid. I feel like if you follow the NBA, like the ending was kind of predictable. You knew that Adam Sandler was going to win off his bet that he made, because I just remember 2012 that the Celtics played, I think the Heat, I believe that year. So that was kind of spoiled in that respect. I knew that the Celtics were going to win that game, but
that was LeBron's crazy year where he, game six, he kind of like put the team on his back. I remember that.
Yeah. So like, it was really interesting, like dive into NBA culture too. Like, I don't know, like it showed there's a lot of stat heads out there, and I don't know. It was a really fun movie if you're an NBA fan, I feel like.
I just can't believe you didn't think it was a pretty movie. I thought it was pretty, pretty. All the jewelry shots and KG, all the colors and stuff like that.
Like, when you compare it to, like, other movies like Dunkirk or 1917. I haven't seen 1917 yet, but where there's, like, super wide shots and you're just kind of soaking in, like, what's going on. There was nothing like that in that movie. It was just following this dude the whole time. And it did a close-up on the opal. I guess that's what you could say the pretty shot was.
I thought there was a lot of close-ups, but I thought that was kind of the point. It was really claustrophobic. You got in everybody's face a lot, whether you're in the club, in the jewelry shop, which is like really small. You got like a real sense of like stuff like that. The only wide shots were like when they're in the street. Other than that, you're just inside of a car with close-ups. It was just really claustrophobic, I thought. And I thought it was pretty cool. It's like the opposite of Dunkirk, where Dunkirk has these huge panning shots of like an entire beach or airplanes and stuff like that. You didn't really feel claustrophobic other than the parts where it's like in the boat or whatever, when you're meant to feel it. And this movie just felt like real intimate. And I just thought that was kind of the point.
Yeah. I didn't notice any unique shots in my like point of view. There wasn't any cool one cut shots or anything like that where, I don't know. Like, I could see where
I get what you mean. There's a lot of quick shots. There's not a lot of one takes. I guess the only one take was when Harold, Harold. Now you got me mixed up. Howard like gets like is answering 17 calls, and he fired his employee who dumped codeine into the fish tank.
Yeah, that was probably the funniest scene. I guess what I'm saying is there wasn't like a whole lot of creative cinematography in my eyes. That's what I noticed. I mean,
yeah.
What did you think of like the? I was trying to think of the meaning of the deep dives into where it zoomed into the opal, and then you start to see the universe, like, and they start the movie with that, and they end the movie with that. Like, what do you think of? Where were they going for there?
I don't know. Maybe it has to do like how in the beginning of Lord of the Rings, where you can see the etching on the ring, one ring to rule them all, something like that. I don't know. It's just their cinematography and like the way they shoot their stuff is like modern, but it's like kind of like 80s ish, like kind of like with the soundtrack and everything like that. I know it's like a modern 80s take, like techno and stuff like that, and you kind of got that feel. There's a little bit of 80s influence in there. I don't know. It's just showing you that like rock meant a whole lot. It's kind of what the movie was centered around, other than Howard.
Yeah, so I liked it. I didn't love it. I don't really got any more takes on it. I thought what's the actor's name? He plays Sandler's like... he's the guy that brings in KG. I forget his name, but I thought he was pretty...
Lakeith. He's from
Atlanta.
Sorry to Bother.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen that movie. Yeah, Sorry to Bother You. I have seen that. I really want to see that.
Oh,
I heard it's
pretty
good.
You got to see that. That's like, that's a good movie. Like,
I really like
that
him.
One.
He's a good actor. I think it's Lakeith Stanfield. Lakeith.
Yeah.
Lucky.
So I don't got any more takes on it, unless you have anything else.
The last thing I'll say is just like I like the Safdie brothers. I like their last two movies. I thought they're pretty good. I'm excited for what they do next. They're kind of like a niche kind of director. They're like super unique in the way they shoot stuff.
All right, so we'll close out the show. Thanks for tuning in to the Hall of Lame podcast with Trey Benson and my friend Jason Velia. Thank you, Jackie B, for co-producing. All right. Thanks for tuning in to the show. See you next week. Bye.
Lakers do not have any timeouts. The Heat in the penalty, so they can't foul. Wade is guarding Bryant. Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up for the buzzer, banks it in, ha-ha! He banks in the three!